The Global Women's Strike was born in 1999 when women in Ireland decided to welcome the new millennium with a national general strike. They asked the International Wages for Housework campaign to support their call and called on women all over the world to make the strike global on March 8, 2000. Grassroots women's organizations in over 60 countries have participated in strike events since then. The strike came out of a history of struggle for recognition for all the work that women do, paid and unpaid. According to the United Nations, women do two-thirds of the world's work, ranging from the unpaid work in the home, raising children, growing and preparing food, caring for the ill, to work in the informal economy, to the paid work in services and in manufacturing. Although in every country all this work is basic to welfare and even survival of humanity, it is devalued and ignored by the market. Women get only 5% of the world's assets in return. The Global Women's Strike calls for a reorganization of the global economy on the principle of investing in caring, not killing. In many countries, affiliated groups play important roles in movements against war and racism. And we're joined now by an organizer with the Global Women's Strike internationally. Unfortunately, we only have one on the line. Andaya works with Red Thread in Georgetown, Guyana, and the International Women Count Network. Welcome, Andaya, to CKLN in Toronto.
Thank you. Happy International Women's Day to you, too, to your listeners.
Can you tell us about your organization and what you're doing doing today to celebrate International Women's Day?
Well, you know, in January and February of this year, women and men, women from the Global Women's Strike and men from Payday, which works with us, we went to Venezuela to attend the World Social Forum. But for us, it really was an opportunity to be in Venezuela, to be in the heart of a revolution that is led by women. And what we want to do, those of us who are in Guyana, what we want to do is to try to take the experience that we had in Venezuela back to grassroots women that we organize with in Guyana. Because what is happening in Venezuela is really a strength for all of us who are struggling all over the world. And it's especially a strength for those of us who are struggling in parts of the world where the movement is low and where people have suffered many defeats. So we want to do a report back on Venezuela that's not simply a report back, but a starting point and an opening towards discussing the power of women is what we want to discuss.
Now, you have worked with the International Women Count Network, which aims to see women's work valued properly in all the statistics that governments keep and in the assessment of an international economy. And can you tell us what's happening in Venezuela with moves to compensate women who work in the home?
Well, Venezuela is the first country in the world. It's part of what proves how revolutionary it is. Venezuela is the first country in the world whose constitution has within it an article. It's actually Article 88, which recognizes that housework is work which adds value and which says that on that basis, women should receive resources for that work. And while we were in Venezuela, President Chavez actually announced that while they were waiting for the legislation that would bring Article 88 of the Constitution into force, that he would begin immediately, or almost immediately, to give, beginning with 100,000 women, of the poorest women, 80% of the minimum wage, precisely as wages for housework. So that even though Article 88 is not yet being implemented, what Venezuela is about to do is to give the first wages for housework that the world has ever seen, which is something that we have been fighting for since 1972.
Can you talk about what you saw in Venezuela when you were there, about women's participation in the Bolivarian Revolution? Can you tell any stories about what you saw and what you're going to be telling your sisters and your brothers back home?
Well, what we saw, incidentally, this isn't our first trip to Venezuela, but for some of us, it was the longest trip that we've had, and we had an opportunity to see more than we've seen before, because Venezuela is very much a revolution with grassroots women in the leadership, not participating, but in the leadership. And you could see this everywhere we went. We went all over the country. And, for example, you have land committees. And the job of those land committees is to do the work that will ensure that land reform takes place. And you have very much women who describe themselves as not having gone very far in school, but who have been trained to do measurements and all of the technical stuff that will you know, undergird that land reform. You have health committees. I remember there was one place we were in, I think it was Las Teques, where they were reporting on what the health committees do in order to ensure that health care comes to the communities. And that health care is very much spearheaded by Cuban doctors who are giving the most incredible support to Venezuela, as they are, incidentally, in other places, parts of the Caribbean and in Africa and so on. And after they had finished reporting what the health committees did, one of us asked, well, for example, suppose you have a doctor in the community who is not performing properly, what can you do about it? And to our amazement and joy, what they said was that they had succeeded in removing one such doctor. In other words, that it wasn't simply a question of you know, ensuring that people got to the doctor and got to the medical services and so on. They could also ensure that medical services that were in the community and which were not performing on behalf of the community and in the interest of the community, that those could be changed if they, the members of the health committee, reported that the service was not adequate. So you have all over, you have missions, they call them, which are, you know, to improve education and literacy and various other services. And in all of those services, women are the absolute, I don't want to say backbone, because as one man who was talking to us said, don't keep on calling yourselves backbone, because you are more than that. You are, in fact, leading the whole of this. And I have to say that President Chavez is the only president I've ever heard of in the world who openly recognizes and constantly that women are leading the revolutionary process in Venezuela.
We are speaking with Andaya of Red Thread in Georgetown, Guyana. Red Thread is a multiracial women's organization that brings together the women of Indian, African, and Indigenous background. Can you tell us about the work that you do on a day-to-day basis and how you are trying to bring together women to go forward in society?
Well, the perspective from which we organize across race is the perspective that we learned from the Global Women's Strike. And to give you a specific example, last year we did a time use survey. We think it's the first time use survey that has been done, especially by grassroots women surveying other grassroots women and themselves. And this survey didn't have any academic purpose. We really are not interested in that. The purpose of the survey, during which women either wrote or spoke their time use, you know, hour by hour, minute by minute during the day, the purpose of that was not only so that we could say at the end of it to each other, look, this is how much work women do, this is how much work is unwaged. It wasn't only that. It was also so that women of Indian, African, and Indigenous descent could see the similarities in their work, could see that while we have serious racial tensions in Guyana among the groups and so on, that as women, they are located in almost exactly the same place within the economy and within the society. And I said almost only because, of course, some women are poorer than others, and in Guyana, indigenous women are the poorest of all. So we use that, therefore, as the basis for bringing women together across race on a very kind of firm footing. You can try to bring women together by simply saying we ought to be together, but that is not enough. There has to be some concrete basis on which women can actually see the similarity of their interests and needs, and therefore the similar imperatives of struggle for all of them.
Now, as you know very well, especially after conducting such a survey, women have so many responsibilities in the home and in outside workplaces. How do you recruit and work with women who are willing and able to contribute to political projects and maintain your focus on grassroots women who are already so overworked?
Without pretending that it's easy, the simple answer to that is that you succeed better in women, particularly grassroots women who are the most overworked. You succeed better in those women wanting to organize politically if you're working to organize them politically and organize with them politically in their own interests. You can't succeed in getting them to organize or winning them to organize politically if you're following an agenda that really is in the interest of other women, of professional women, of middle-class women, and so on. It has to be in their interest. And I think this is a fundamental difference between us and a lot of our other organizing, that a lot of our other organizing, particularly organizing that is often called feminist organizing, a lot of that really is working for changes that will benefit only or mainly professional women, and from which then what is supposed to happen is a trickle-down to grassroots women. But, you know, by the time it trickles down, the trickle is usually dry. And that is why I don't see any reason why women, grassroots women, should be interested in organizing of that kind. I mean, to take a simple example, you know, every time I read anything about, you know, breaking or shattering the glass ceiling, I wonder what it is people think the glass ceiling means to a bonded laborer, a woman who is a bonded laborer in Chhattisgarh, India, or for that matter, a woman on welfare in New Orleans. It doesn't mean anything. It's not organizing from the perspective of grassroots women and in the interest of grassroots women.
Your organization and you personally have participated in the Global Women's Strike and many other international initiatives. What are some of the challenges in working with feminists internationally, and what are some of the benefits that you've seen?
Well, first of all, with respect, our organizing is not international feminist organizing for the reason that I just said. I don't want to be disrespectful. I know a whole lot of women and some men who would call themselves feminists who do good work and even great work. But organized feminism has been and continues to be what I described just now. Organizing that is only or mainly in the interest of professional women, largely in the interest of careers and so on. That's not our organizing. Our organizing starts the other way. It starts from the perspective of those at the bottom, who are, in the first place, women of color internationally, who do the most work for the least, who grow all the food, but whose children are the first to die. That's where our organizing starts. And the challenge of that organizing is learning and having to keep learning how to be mutually accountable, and unlearning the historic relations among women with different levels of power, whether you're talking about women who are of different races, women who are different nationalities, women who are different ages, women who are of different sexual choices, women who are of different disabilities. The big challenge is how to work together in a way that is radically different from what we're accustomed to. And the basis on which we do that is that we organize sectors in the Global Women's Strike. We organize sectors autonomously, precisely so that each sector can come to the table and ensure that its demands are being addressed and confronted. So that the structure of the Global Women's Strike and the structure of our organizing is one that really is aimed at meeting the challenge that I just described, at meeting the challenge of women learning to organize across sector, across country, across difference. Because we've structured ourselves in that way, I think we do confront those challenges in a way that is increasingly effective. And we've won all kinds of victories, ranging from victories in a formal institution like the United Nations, where, you know, across many years we fought for governments to acknowledge in a formal way that caring work is work that must be made visible and that must be counted, must be measured and valued and paid for. That is in various plans of action out of international conferences of women, most particularly in the Beijing Plan of Action from 1995. So that's one kind of victory. But there have been other victories of various kinds. There have been victories within countries which have agreed to recognize, measure and value women's caring work. There have been victories on the ground where women have won the right to free medical care, have won the right to water, all of which are part of the demands that we organize around.
And can you tell us, last, what you're looking forward to in the next year? Are there any particular campaigns that you're following, any particular dates that are coming up that people should be aware of internationally?
I think over the next year, you know, Selma James said the other day in answer to a question that we don't invent struggles, we invent ways of organizing for the struggles that are there, that come up. So that over the next year, I don't know all the dates in the various countries, but I know in general what our issues are, and so any particular dates will be around that. If you look at what our fundamental demand is, which is invest in caring, not killing, that is a demand for the trillions that are wasted on war and military spending to be used instead to meet the needs of our communities, beginning with the needs of women as carers on whom everybody else depends. Now, if that is your fundamental demand, then part of what you're struggling against always is against war. So we do a lot of anti-war work. Part of what you're struggling for is solidarity with, I'm sorry, I withdraw solidarity because I mean more than that. It's working closely with the grassroots women in the revolutionary process in Venezuela, in the resistance to U.S. occupation in Haiti, where, for example, it has been amazing, particularly to those of us in the Caribbean who have historically had a good relationship with Canada. It has been amazing to us to watch Canada's complicity in the U.S. coup and U.S. occupation of Haiti. So we work with Haiti, we work with Venezuela, we do anti-war work, we do a number of things, and we do that all the time. And if particular dates come up, then on particular dates there will be, yes, special events. But those are struggles that we're engaged in all of the time, all year.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Have a good day.
You too. We were just speaking with Andaya, who works with Red Thread in Georgetown, Guyana, and the International Women Count Network. And she is participating with the Global Women's Strike today, an initiative that began in 1999 and has picked up steam ever since, with grassroots women from over 60 countries participating in events since then. You can find out more at globalwomenstrike.net.